hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Tom Edwards. On today's programme, we're getting to grips with the need-to-know music and TV releases with my guests in the studio. Today, Will Hodgkinson, Chief Rock and Pop Critic for The Times, and Alice Vincent, Arts and Entertainment Writer for The Telegraph. Plus, we'll discover the Arts Initiative looking to shake up the cultural scene in Sarajevo and the Korean Music Festival hitting London later on this month. All that, plus the global countdown, which takes us to Asia this week on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Alice, Will, welcome to the programme. Very good to have you both back with us as ever. Will, we're going to begin with music picks this week. The first one we're going to talk about is the, well, already much discussed new release by Taylor Swift. She released her new single, Look What You Made Me Do, a couple of weeks ago, followed by her sixth album in November, I think it is.
On its way, yeah.
November 10th.
On its way. Oh, wow, the days. Mm. We're counting down. For those of you who are yet to hear the song, if there can be anybody anywhere, let's have a quick listen first up. But I got smarter, I got harder in the nick of time. Honey, I rose up from the dead, I do it all the time. I got a list of names and yours is in red underlined. I check it once, then I check it twice. Oh, oh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. That's Look What You Made Me Do by Taylor Swift. Well, when this was released, there was an understandable frenzy. What is it that keeps getting people into such a frenzy? In this case, is it the involvement of Right Said Fred, potentially? Is it just
how
Taylor rolls? What explains this?
It's timing, ultimately. It's somebody who's very, very good at using the culture and using and getting people to talk about her, really. Mm. Because this is probably the most self-referential song that any pop star has ever done. It's just, the video is just a series of references to herself and to various public moments in her life. Most famously, the I Heart Taylor Swift Tom Hiddleston t-shirt, which is in there. The interesting thing I felt, this is a number one US and UK single as we speak. It's now the most streamed song ever by a female pop star. It's not very good. And I'm not saying
I was,
that.
I was going to come on to this.
I'm not saying that someone who doesn't like Taylor Swift, because I do like Taylor Swift. And I think the last couple of albums were great. The country stuff was kind of fun. And she just released one fantastic pop single after another. And they were really, really good. But to me, this is very charmless. You know, and it's, like I said, it's self-obsessed. But just musically, I mean, I don't find the Right Said Fred choral hook. I mean, it kind of builds up. And you think something exciting is going to happen. And then it does this thing of going down. And really, it's just a copy of so many other tracks. Not really Right Said Fred, but things that have been bubbling around in pop and urban and sort of semi-indie music around for the last few years. It's not very original. So I don't think it's that good song. And I think the reason it's done so well is because whether it's her or her managers or it's just sheer luck, but all the conversation has been turned on her and she's been very good at manipulating that. But also the idea that Taylor Swift is kind of, you know, there's that line, which I don't find that clever or, you know, a very good line, which is, she said the old Taylor Swift is dead and so on. So she's really used every public moment from her career over the last couple of years at least and turned it into a fuel for a pop song that repositions her as a kind of cool, rather cruel seductress type, which I don't think she is.
As you go along with that, I mean, it's interesting. There is this feeling of this sort of weird cultural phenomenon, this sort of weird ubiquitousness that she enjoys. Is there a risk that that has taken over from the music to such a point that, you know, maybe she's put out a single which just isn't that good ultimately?
I mean, the thing is with Swift, and that's what the whole point of this single and this video and what many Swifties believe the album is going to be, is that she is artifice, and all of the different selves we've had from every other album has been a construction. And so when she's like, oh, the old Taylor is dead, not a direct quote, but along those lines, when she says that, it plays a guessing game. It's like, oh, well, is this the actual Taylor Swift? Is this a new artificial type? Who are we seeing? Who are we not? And that's what keeps people guessing, I think. And I think the really interesting thing about this song is that she has been silent for 2 years. There was a big fuss in October last year when it's her 10th anniversary that would be the new album. She has been silent through public dumpings, public relationships, the Kim Kardashian scandal, the Katy Perry feud. She hasn't said a thing and she's been saving it up. And now this record is going to spill the beans on everything.
So, I mean, mean, it kind of feels like it's a PR masterstroke, but I would argue that it's not fantastic pop music.
Quite. And I'm going to listen to it all anyway, because the thing is, it's just fascinating to devour that. Yeah. Even if you know it's a big pantomime, it's fascinating.
No, it's
to
true.
Devour.
And that's, I mean, that's the interesting thing. It's kind of turned it. She used it very, very cleverly. So this story is interesting to people. You know, the Kanye West rift. Was it constructed? All these different things. I mean, this is public. These are things that shouldn't be public. And yet they've been made public by the parties involved to benefit both parties.
And what of the sort of artistic merits of making all these things public? We've talked about, you know, the feuds, the fights. I mean, those have always been the source of great creativity for musicians.
Definitely.
Anyway. Is she taking the game too far? Is she pushing that envelope too much?
Not if it's good music. You know, everyone's done it from Marvin Gaye to John Lennon. You know, everyone in pop music has used elements that the public may or may not know about, from their private lives and from things that have been put out there. That's all fine. And to be honest with you, the album is guaranteed to do incredibly well. Whatever it sounds like. I mean, she could blow on a kazoo at this stage in her career and everyone would buy it. But it's
that may be on there.
That would actually be a great moment if she does. But yeah, to me, I mean, this song is, you know, it's not a fantastic song. I mean, if you compare it to like Blank Space or We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. What was the one, Alice, we were talking earlier on and I said, I think it's a fantastic, Shake It Off.
I do not think Shake It Off is a fantastic song.
I think Shake It Off is amazing. You know, I think that's just a great, fun pop song that is just one cheerful hook after the other. This is, to me, somebody kind of trying to be something she's not, which is fine, because that's, again, the nature of pop artifice. But, you know, you've got to pull off a convincing artifice, at least.
You see, that's very clever. I like it. Look What You Made Me Do by Taylor Swift is out now. The album Reputation will come out on November the 10th. Interesting to hear. Next up, let's discuss the new album by LA art rock duo Sparks. Hippopotamus is the band's 25th album. That is impressive.
26th.
It's a 26th album.
Even more.
It's even more impressive than I thought. Is this classic Sparks, the new record?
I mean, Sparks are going to continue to be a cult band. They won't sell that many copies. You know, if they have a hit, they'll be lucky. It's an absolute masterpiece. It's so funny. The thing is that, you know, Ron and Russell Mayall are now in their late 60s and early 70s. Ron is in his early 70s and Russell's in his late 60s. It's quite unusual for a band or artists of that age to be doing music, which I would argue is as interesting now as it was, you know, in their 20s and 30s. It's so creative. And what I loved about this, which is sort of the opposite of what Taylor Swift is doing, is that each song picks up on a small detail, which doesn't seem that significant, and blows it out of all proportion until it takes on this kind of gravitas. And it's almost about life itself. And so this song is about Scandinavian design. The story goes that his girlfriend just comes around to his house because she likes the Scandinavian design of his table and chair. There's nothing else that she's particularly interested in. And then she goes off and he says, yeah, she's got another job. She's a concubine for a guy. And he says that, you know, the concubine's house has got chandeliers and knickknacks everywhere. Clearly not so tasteful. And so he says, oh, she'll be back for my Scandinavian design. So it's really a love story. But he's just talking about the elegant lines of tables and chairs.
There is no other option right now than to hear a little of Scandinavian design. Take it away. A little of Scandinavian design there. And it's interesting hearing more from them about a rekindling of their love of pop, maybe partly inspired by working with Franz Ferdinand a couple of years ago, and that sort of made them fall back in love with pop music. Do you think there's anything about that, collaborating with other artists, helping to keep fresh? I mean, lots of great artists have done that down the years.
Actually, in the case of Sparks, I don't think it is the case. I think they actually got fairly annoyed with Franz Ferdinand along the way and consider themselves on a much higher level creatively.
Or maybe it rekindled because they thought, hey, look, we don't need
this. We can do this better.
Yeah.
We can do this better.
So collaboration still works, maybe.
Well, collaboration always brings something out, doesn't it? And you're right. I think the reason why I've been thinking about why Sparks still so good, okay, they had hits, you know, not that many, but they did have hits with This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us and Beat the Clock. But they never really joined the party. They never got through. They never became the big pop stars. They never made it in that way. So they're always, always, always trying. They're trying to push themselves. They're trying to do something interesting. They're too eccentric to make music that sits happily in the mainstream. They're on the margins. But I think they've got that thing of they won't want to go to a party that they'd be invited to. But at the same time, they want to go to the party.
The album is out today on BMG Records. Alice, is that the sort of thing that would pique your interest? I don't know if for Sparks what Swifties are to Taylor Swift. I don't know what the... Is there a word? Yeah. Are you a member of that?
I'm not a Sparkle. Sparks, though.
Sparkle. Sparkle.
Sparkle is good, yeah. Could you be won over from Rihanna?
You know, I'll put it this way. Like, when the FFS collaboration happened, and that was when the aforementioned Franz Ferdinand Sparks collaboration, I just found it the most created for tedious nerdism. Like, I just could not get enthusiastic about it.
Then not until you tried it.
Well, yeah, I just thought, oh, great, jolly good. And yet they got these amazing festival billings. I just thought both parties were better off alone. And Sparks is clearly, I've got 26 albums to go and listen to, right?
Exactly.
It's going to be my weekend.
It's going to be a long weekend.
Wild. Yeah.
The album's out on BMG Records. Before we switch gears to television, we're going to pop over to Sarajevo for an organisation hoping to give the Bosnian capital's art scene a bit of a facelift. Before it landed in Bosnia, Mixer House was one of the biggest cultural players in Belgrade. Over its 5 years there, it was at the centre of the revival of the city's Savamala neighbourhood. The venue itself made stylish use of the area's industrial heritage, and its programmes brought Belgraders the best in design, performance and debate on a range of important issues. But rising rents forced Mixer House to close in May, and it's still looking for a new venue in Belgrade. But that means the team can concentrate on their new venture, which opens today. Monocle's Guy Delaunay went along for a sneak peek with work still in progress.
Welcome to Mixer House Sarajevo. Now, on the outside, this looks like a couple of pretty run-down buildings, to be honest with you. The plaster crumbling off the walls, old bent pipes running between the buildings. Go inside. Well, it still looks like a bit of a rundown old warehouse, but there's clearly something going on here. Brand new black painted metal staircases, a gallery area, new rooms being created on the inside, but a very large, wide open space with exposed brickwork, metal beams. It's got something of the spirit of the great art centre that was Mixer House in Belgrade, but it's double, because here we are in another room at the moment. It has a car parked in it and some broken glass where the offices for this warehouse once were, and as well a crane which is running the length of the room on rails. And if you look up overhead, you can just see the shadows of hands working on scrubbing the skylights, which are stained with presumably years of dirt.
I'm Stefan Čović from Belgrade. I'm an architect. We hope that we make something like we made in Belgrade from all the warehouse. We make something for designers, from ordinary people to come to see, and industrial heritage for ordinary people to see that.
What is it precisely, for people who don't know, that Mixer House does? Because people, if they went to Belgrade, they might have had a night out in Mixer House, they might have seen a concert at Mixer House, they might have gone for a drink or even a meal, but Mixer's always done a lot more than that, hasn't it?
It's a diversity of the happening. We have like a concert, we have theater show, we have design market, we have a restaurant daily, Balkan design store, we call for designers to present themselves to people. It's something that there's not for now in Sarajevo, but we hope we will bring it.
Who are Mixer House people, would you say, Stefan?
A lot of different people. Like, we have from young generation to old generation, from like hipsters to metalheads. So
Mixer's co-founder Maja Lalic says the Sarajevo branch is more than just a cultural project.
Not only Sarajevo needs Mixer, but also Belgrade needs contact with Sarajevo. And I think it's a long-awaited hand of friendship from Belgrade to Sarajevo that was much, much needed. And this is what we feel every day, that this was really the right move. We are connecting many different worlds. And it's, you know, high culture with popular culture, alternative circles with, you know, scientific circles. So it's really the name justified itself through last 5 years of our activities in Belgrade. So it's this kind of multidisciplinary approach that was often missing in many of our cultural fields. Someone gave a nice speech when we were holding this press conference in Sarajevo, saying, above all, we need this project to connect Sarajevo with Sarajevo, which means, you know, the different circles that are not touching each other that need to get more interaction within their own community.
Mixer House Belgrade achieved that in spades and helped to revive a city neighbourhood in the process. If it can do half as much in its new home, that'll be a real cause for cheer. For Monocle, in Sarajevo, I'm Guy Delaunay.
Thank you, Guy, and Mixer House in Sarajevo opens today. You're with the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Tom Edwards. I'm joined in the studio today by Will Hodgkinson, chief rock and pop critic for The Times, and Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph. Who we turn to now to talk television. Alice, let's go to Netflix. Ozark came out a few weeks ago, I think maybe a couple of months ago. Some of our listeners may have binged to the max. I gather you're still working your way through.
I'm pacing myself.
And it's hard to do because it's quite Moorish. I've watched the whole show. Bring us up to speed. What's the sort of premise with this one?
People are comparing it to Breaking Bad. Essentially, you have a fish-out-of-water criminal, you've got a middle-class financial advisor who has moved his whole family to the Ozarks in Missouri, this mystical, lakey place, because he's got involved in a money laundering scandal and the Mexican cartel are on his tail. Meanwhile, his wife, Laura Linney, who for Love Actually fans is somewhat of a favourite, is cheating on him, but also somewhat complicit in his money laundering scheme, which he is embroiled in order to pay back and stave off the threat of death from the Mexican cartel.
Your usual sort of family saga.
Family saga. Brady Bunch on speed.
Let's hear a little bit. This is a clip from Ozark. Let's have a listen.
We made a choice to move our family to a more peaceful place.
Mom, what are we doing here?
Your father's laundering money for a Mexican drug cartel.
Marty, where's my $5 million?
Someone's going to die.
Relax.
Why do I have this feeling we both know that you'd be better off dead?
Marty!
We're gonna kill your family and be done with all this madness.
Jesus, Marty, he knows the kid's names.
Dramatic stuff. Now, Marty Bird there, the main man, is played by Jason Bateman, who I guess most people would know more for his comedic roles. I think he also directs some of the episodes.
How does
he fare? Because it's a tough assignment, because it is It's proper black. I mean, it's comedy of the blackest sort, but it's also pretty dramatic.
There are funny bits in it, but it is nonetheless something in which he's playing a family man who are putting his whole family at risk. It's not a lol a minute. He does well. This is kind of, I think, the conversation that is dominating Ozark most. Isn't Jason Bateman good? I mean, people recognise him from Arrested Development, where he plays kind of the man who holds the dysfunctional family together. So, you know, you could say it's a relative parallel. But he's very funny, very nerdy, and here he is. Well, he's mercurial, carries the role, and he is relatively convincing in what is quite an unconvincing situation. And I really hope that this will do for Jason Bateman what Breaking Bad did for Bryan Cranston, who was a kind of middling actor, best known for being the dad of Malcolm in the Middle, and then bam, he's on Broadway.
And what about Laura Linney? You mentioned already that she's a favourite in many quarters. I think she's pretty good in this because, again, in some ways, I don't know, felt almost a little bit kind of underwritten at times, her character, but she brings such, I don't know, force of personality. She's quite an economical actress.
She's just very watchable. Mm. I think there's something that's inherently charming about her, even though her character isn't particularly. And I'm just really pleased to see her in a grown-up serious drama. Like, your major acting credit should not be Love Actually, you know, not for an actress of that calibre.
It's a bit of a slow burner, dark in tone. There's obviously the Breaking Bad sort of analogies. Will, I know you haven't seen the Ozark, but would you be drawn in by what you've heard so far? That description, is that kind of up your street as crime thrillers go?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that you know, the whole Netflix revolution or Amazon, whatever you call it, has given crime thrillers such a broader scope to explore characters and get to know characters. And I'm hoping that this does that in the way that Breaking Bad did, and in different ways. You know, you have programs like Transparent, which did similar things, even though they were comedies, or, you know, lighter. But they had, now seems to be this way. Is it, you know, because it's changed the way you watch television. It's also changed the way that scripts are written. And I think the chance to really get to know and live with characters is there. So I'm hoping it's like that.
And it certainly, you can tell it appeals to actors and directors and writers alike, because they say, look, I've got 10 hours or 12 hours. What about how do you take your Netflix, etc.? Are you a binger? Do you a little tipple here and there? Do you have the discipline? You strike me as a very disciplined man.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't quite say that. It depends. You know, I mean, I'm working late hours and I'm reviewing gigs so much. And so, you know, it depends. I mean, generally, it's not more than two a night.
Okay.
Because there isn't more than 2 hours.
That's not
between
binging. That's very
and the dishes and putting the kids to bed.
Okay. Ozark has been renewed for a second season, which I'm very excited about. That'll be out next August. But for now, you can catch the whole of the first series on Netflix, as we've mentioned. Something a little lighter in tone. We need some levity, don't we, along the way. The Great British Bake Off. A dozen contestants are judged on their baking abilities by some of the industry's top experts. A UK hit TV show, but it caused great controversy last year. It was taken away from the BBC, where it had aired for 7 years, and sold at great expense to Channel 4. A shake-up in the judges and presenters. And as the new series kicked off in its new home in the last couple of weeks, millions tuned in to see if Bake Off 2.0 would be as good. Alice, that's the question. Is it as good?
It's so much better than any of us were expecting. Oh my goodness. What I love is that when Channel 4 bought Bake Off, famously, you bought an empty tent for £70 million, which was the quiff at the time.
And it was £70 million. That was about the... I mean, that's a lot of money for a...
Don't quote me on it. I think it was around that. It was a year ago I was reporting on this. But yes, yeah. It was a lot of money. And of course, all of those figures were always reported in quotation marks. Anyway, but everyone was like, along with Mel and Sue and Mary Berry, who are the beloved regular characters or presenters of Bake Off, everyone's like, I'll boycott it. 12.1 million people tuned in last week. And that was the overnight figures. It was the biggest show Channel 4 has had in 30 years. Everyone tuned back in and everyone was saying, oh, it's quite nice, isn't it? Oh, it's nice to have it back. We don't even mind Paul Hollywood that much. So yeah, look, it's nice to have it back. I do not like the ad breaks. And I have my reservations about Prue Leith, who has replaced Mary. But no, all in all, look, it's a good TV vehicle. It'll work whether they've got the wrong presenters or the right presenters. They've changed so little. And I think the real proof of the pudding was that Mary Berry stood up at the TV Choice Awards last night and said, it's going to be brilliant.
There you go. High praise indeed. Mm. And as you say, very gracious. Well, I mean, I guess Alice identified the key thing there. It's a bit of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, I gather you're a viewer.
Yeah, I love it.
Is that the secret? Channel 4, they've paid the money. You might have been tempted to say, right, what do we add? How do we move this on? But actually the secret was to say, yeah, do you know what? Let's just leave it.
Well, you know, it is different. I mean, Noel Fielding, I love him. I think he's fantastic. He's, you know, what I love about him is that he doesn't know why he's there, which we don't know why he's there either.
Did you think that was because I watched the first episode and I don't know, I felt like he wanted to let his anarchic, you know, some of his sort of alter ego mayhem out, but he seemed to be slightly, I don't know, restrained in some way?
No, that's good. That's, you know, the same as Salvador Dali doing the bunch of adverts that he did in the 1970s and 80s. You know, that is great.
The discipline.
Yeah, it's great to have, you know, it's great to have sort of someone who comes from the sort of weird, I guess you could call it studenty more than weird, but anyway, you know, comes from the Mighty Boosh tradition, going into the heart of mainstream British life. It's really good fun. I wouldn't say there's, you know, the same chemistry that there once was.
But maybe that takes a bit of time, potentially, as well.
Well, I mean, Mel and Sue were a double act for years and years and years, and then, you know, suddenly Sandy Toksvig is thrown together with Noel Fielding, and so it's going to be different. But, you know, that's fine. It doesn't really matter. And they had, you know, they're very likeable. And actually, I like Prue Leith. I mean, she was, you know, she's a very, very respected cook, and I think that weight sort of came across. She knows what she's talking about, and got to say, I thought it was really good.
What about the legs on this one, though? It's because I suppose it gets a shot in the arm. People feel like it's an old friend that's come back, and the millions watching seem to suggest that. But, you know, what are we, 8 seasons?
Yeah.
Ultimately, it is just people doing some cooking in a tent. You know, are you starting to sense that it maybe would need a freshen up at some point, or is there a long way for it to run yet, do you think?
I mean, this is the question mark in it all, is that what would have happened had it stayed on the BBC for the last few years. I mean, ever since it's been on, the ratings have gone up and up and up and up. And you kind of see this a little bit. It happened with X Factor as well, around 2008, so about 8 seasons in. X Factor was hitting its stride. You know, people were running in the streets and crushing each other to see their X Factor, like, contestants perform even before the final. It was the glory days. You know, you had acts like Little Mix come out of it, One Direction, and then it all tailed off and it became somewhat of a, you know, monstrosity that we have to put up with every year. I really hope that doesn't happen to Bake Off, because I don't think we've got someone as villainous as Simon Cowell at the heart of it. But, well, the proof... I'm going to stop making cake puns. But
you can say the proof is in the pudding. That's
I've already said it. But we'll taste the difference. We'll see if it works. I mean, there's so much money in it, as Afa mentioned. That channel's
going to work while it's while
it's the, gonna they're going to the cling on to the bitter end.
Are rolling in. Let's hear a little clip, just in case you're, I don't know, one of our international listeners, and the merits of Great British Bake Off are yet to find their way to you. Let's give you a flavour.
Stacey's making red velvet chocolate sponge, which she'll decorate to look like a designer clutch handbag.
It's quite a wet mix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be quite moist.
Looking forward to the moist clutch.
Okay. Yeah.
How are you going to pour your chocolate? Are you going to pour it on? Are you going to dip it?
Because we are allowed an exposed bottom, I will just pour it all on.
If there's an opportunity to keep the bottom exposed, we should all embrace that. I'm planning on taking my trousers off and pulling through, do the judging.
Behave yourself, Noel Fielding. Classic. The Great British Bake Off airs every Tuesday at 8 p.m. on Channel 4. Alison Will, thanks for your reviews today. We'll be coming back to you in just a minute. But first, we're going to talk Korean music. K-Music is London's festival of Korean music that explores the country's musical history beyond its current K-pop chart hits. Over a month, musicians from the country will play to British crowds in venues across the capital. Paul Wadey from the Korean Cultural Centre in London is one of the organisers of K-Music, and he tells Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco a little bit more about it.
Korea's had a strong history of promoting and developing its cultural assets, traditional music or contemporary music or as you say, film, food. Lots of areas of Korean culture is becoming more and more accessible with every year. And some of the things we do at the Korean Cultural Centre, as well as organise the K-Music Festival, is to help those artists, musicians and performers to find new audiences in the UK.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the lineup, which is super interesting. And when I was doing some research, I discovered incredible artists that I've never seen it. For example, the opening will be with Black String and Catherine Tickell. Can you tell us a bit more about the band Black String?
Yeah, Black String they're an interesting sound. They take traditional instruments and they also have Western instruments. And so when you listen to them, you hear these deep, earthy drums and this bone-tingling bass coming from the gomango, which is an instrument, a hardwood zither with twisted silk strings. And when you bring those sounds together and then you add the drum or you add an electric guitar, it makes an interesting mix that really is quite memorable. And on this particular occasion, we're opening the festival with a collaboration with Catherine Tickell, and she performs the Northumbrian pipes. And we're interested to hear what comes out of her work with Black String. So they do some sets on their own and then they bring the concert together with a collaboration at the end.
Before we talk about some other artists in the lineup, I've noticed that especially here in London, you have quite a strong scene of cultural events from South Korea. You know, like we have the film festival, which is a bit later this year. Is there a strong connection? How big, for example, is the South Korean community here in London?
The South Korean community is about 50,000 nationally, but depending on student populations, it can peak and trough. So we say it's around 35,000 to 50,000. So it's a relatively new community. It first came in the 1980s, and then it really took off the late 90s when Korea had an economic crash similar to our crash in 2008. And so people started migrating, and then New Malden in southwest London became the heartland of Korea. And now when you visit there, you can see Korean supermarkets, hairdressers, architects. It's a whole mini Korea in leafy Surrey.
Continuing the lineup, we have also another one that I found very interesting, and the look is incredible as well. It's Heemun Lee. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Heemun Lee with his jazz group Prelude. They're going to be performing in the Elgar Room at the Royal Albert Hall. And it's a very theatrical show. It's traditional costumes, it's loud, it's jazzy, it's glitzy, and it's glamour. And it's a full-on jazz cabaret show that's really going to suit well in the Elgar Room, I think.
I love the diversity here. And before we started the interview, you were talking to me about the performance from the 9th of October. It's Woo Jae Park and Shogo Yoshi and Sumik Datta as well. That sounds like an interesting one.
Yes, yeah. These are three very talented young men who have performed in shows all across the world. And then we've persuaded them to come together for our show in London and do a one-off set together. Shogo Yoshi is from Japan, Sumik Datta is British Indian, and Woo Jae Park's Korean. And they're blending traditional sounds and modern sounds with the Gomango and the Sarod. And it's really excited about this one because the whole theme of this year's K Music Festival is collaboration. It's part of a UK-Korea season that we're organising at the moment that leads all the way up to the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. And the theme is collaboration, so collaborating with venues or collaborating with new musical partners. And this one really is embodies all of those things. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough.
And finally, there's a one that is quite interesting. So it's Kingston Rudeska. Some people, okay, they think K-pop in Korea, but not so much ska and reggae.
Yes, ska and reggae. You know, everyone knows of Two Tones and the Specials, and they know of the Scatterlights and ska and reggae of the 60s. And Korea has a strong ska scene, and this is one of their prominent bands of that the genre, and bringing them to London is really exciting. It's going to be the fun night. Every year our K Music Festival has a night of fun. It has one of those concerts where you can really, you know, boogie and wiggle your hips to. And so this is the one we're looking forward to some dancing.
That was Paul Wadey, one of the organisers of K Music, which is on in London from the 15th of September until the 25th of October, and you can get your tickets online right now. To end the show, as always, it's time for the global countdown. Fernando is away this week. I don't know who signed that off, but in his place, it's Bill Luty. Bill, welcome.
Hello.
There he is. Now, we're staying in Asia for this week's countdown, I gather. Tell us, Bill, reveal all, where are we headed?
Well, we're going to China. It's a bit of a curveball this week. Normally we do kind of physical sales, and then now they're starting to more and more include downloads, aren't they, and streams. Last year, the Chinese website is called, I'm going to pronounce this terribly, Yin Yue Te, or YYT, as we're sure we'll refer to it for the rest of this. They teamed up with the Billboard website, Billboard 100, to bring a chart of this website. And it's basically like YouTube mixed for Spotify, so there's only like one version of each song. Official songs go up, but you can watch the videos and they just watch.
Okay, so the idea is we have a truly reflective chart of what
and then you can see exactly what people have watched live, how long they've watched it for, what they've clicked onto next. So it's probably really like one of the most accurate charts around.
They say they call it granular detail.
So that's what we've
got.
And
these sorts of things. I'm reliably informed. Okay, well, let's go. It's usual form. Even though Faye's away, we're still going to count down from 5 to 1. Okay. So kick us off with 5.
In at 5, Will Pan, Coming Home. He's actually a Taiwanese singer, American Taiwanese, so it's kind of good that he's got into the Chinese charts. He's 37, which by all standards...
Bill, careful where you're going with this.
Pretty... For a pop star...
Okay.
That's quite old, isn't it? It's from his most recent album, his 11th album, called Illy, which, from what I can tell, is like a jarring mix of kind of hard rap and then these sort of slow ballads you'd expect.
Interesting. Interesting combination.
That was great.
Well, attracted
something
by
for
love it. Yeah. Can't wait to hear it.
Tell me more. So the video is part of the ratings process. What does that video feature?
Well, so it's a rap video. Of course, he's wearing a red bandana. Of course, he's in a car park. Of course, it's on fire.
Nice.
I mean,
what, this sounds great.
Him on the car park.
He's not on fire. Maybe like there's flames all around, and he's got like a big crew behind him. Some of them may have got burned.
Quite derivative of Crazy in Love, I feel.
Yeah, it's nighttime.
And every other.
And all other.
And that's just my favourite car on fire rap section of a video. It's
okay, so he's pitching. He's pitching in there against some of the big boys, but that's okay. Let's continue. What about four?
Number four, a band called Mira, who I'm struggling to find out much information about. The song's called Born. It looks like K-pop, the video. It sounds like K-pop. There's five of them. They're very young. They're wearing very short skirts.
Who's at three, Bill? Oh, is this EXO, as in the EXO who I play on the Monocle playlist?
Exactly. The very same.
Right.
And they are giants of the K and C-pop world. There's 12 of them. Some of them are in the Korean version. Some of them are in the Chinese version. There's three of them that are in both.
How many can you name?
Well, I can name the three, and I could have named two of the three before I even had to look this up.
So, that's impressive.
Yeah, you'll know Chen from Chen Hai's and Vibe.
Of course.
And you'll know Baekhyun from Suzy and Baekhyun.
Yep.
I didn't know Chanyeol, but, you know, he's in there too. This song is, what's it like? It's got summer reggae vibes.
Okay,
so
I can
see more like
that.
A laid back.
It's a kind of Despacito of the.
I think
Southeast
maybe that's
Asian
what
world.
They've done.
C-pop
they've seen that.
They've seen the way the wind is blowing.
Yeah, and they've gone down there. It's from their new album, The War. And then, like, underneath the video, it said, is the most pre-ordered and fastest selling album in the history of South Korean music. So they're doing it right, whatever they're doing.
That's not rookie numbers. That's
what I liked
time.
Under the video, it says, this song talks about how you let your body move as it wants to and dance freely together on the night before the inevitable war.
Oh, was a bit close to the
wasn't point. Expecting that.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know if I want to listen to that.
Maybe that's the thing we should be listening to as we head for Thermogeddon. I'm not sure.
And then to reflect that, the video, they're drinking like blue cups of tea and then they eat loads of sweets, multicoloured sweets, and then it just goes somewhere, I don't know. I mean, they're like in a field, back in a car park. There's a bit where they're floating on a cloud. Okay. The guy finishes his drink and a rain cloud comes and rains some more drink into his drink. I just wonder what was in those funky coloured sweets.
Probably
nuclear waste.
Appropriate for us.
This is the dystopian future ahead
we
of us.
Should move on rapidly. Getting close to the top of the pile, Bill. What's number two?
Number two, Timmy Zhu with... I realised what this song was called and then had to do a double take. It's just called Leave Me Alone.
Okay.
Is it punk?
It's not. No, it's like a really, really sloppy ballad. He's sad about something.
Oh.
This guy, Timmy Zhu, is like he's an actor and then he's gone into the
oh, diversifying. Okay.
Yeah, from Shanghai. The video is like absolutely amazing. I don't know what he's sad about. So I'm going to break it down to you. I know people describing films and things is rubbish, but this is, I think, probably worth it. He's in London. Big Ben is there. It's pouring with rain. He's got an umbrella. Next, it cuts to him at a table with a plate with a single piece of white bread. He eats the piece of white bread. Cuts to loads and loads of plates falling from the sky onto the floor and smashing. Cuts back to him. He's sobbing and just cramming more bread into his mouth.
It's the new hot pop-up eat-up experience.
Just one.
It's in Soho. Queues around the block.
Mother's pride.
White Hovis into his mouth. Then, just like, cuts to him wandering around London. So he's in Maida Vale. Then he goes to East London. Then he's like outside the Chipotle, the burrito shop.
Nice.
Okay. There's a lot of carbs going on.
And crying and being upset about stuff.
Maybe he was in a romance with a baker or something like that.
That could be
just
it.
Still so painful.
Mm.
Just come on a yeast pilgrimage.
Well, my friend moved to China and he said the one thing he missed was like potatoes and...
We make good bread.
Proper crappy white bread that you get in this country. So maybe that's his trip to London. Just
yeast
to do
pilgrimage.
That.
It could be. I'm aboard. Something managed to keep Timmy Zhu with Leave Me Alone off the top of the pile, what can it be?
It's TF Boys. You know them, Tom. The Fighting Boys, as they're also known. With a song called In the Name of My Faith. There's three of them. Two of them are 17, one of them's 18. They're all Chinese. This band have taken branding to, I think, the next level, basically. So, you know, like, what are you? If you're a Taylor Swift fan, what are you called?
Swiftie. We were talking about that.
Fine. Rihanna has one. I can't remember them. But basically, you have to have one now if you're any kind of self-respecting pop star.
A sparkle.
Sparkle.
I wouldn't go that far. I'm just not quite old enough. But I'm getting there.
Anyway.
So what about if you're a TF Boys enthusiast?
Doesn't matter. Depending on which TF Boy you like, you have your own different name for the member
that you like.
And they have their own colour. So maybe, I don't know how you want to do this, but there's three of us, there's three of them, we can pick our favourite.
It's like Powerpuff Girls.
Carrie Wang. If you like Carrie Wang, you're a little crab.
Ooh.
And your main colour is blue. Roy Wang, he's the main vocalist and lead vocalist. His fans are called Tang Yuan, and his fans are green. Then there's Jackson Yi, who's the Origami Cranes, and red. And his job, main dancer. That's good. Bringing a lot to the group.
Can I ask a quick question about the Fighting Boys?
Yeah.
It's an important one.
Mm-hmm.
Are they fighting each other or the world at large?
Well, triple threat.
In the video to this song, they seem to be fighting some kind of go-karting evil maniac.
Okay. We've all been there.
And then they have a fight because they're trying to get the best time. And then they have a big fight.
So they just fight with everything
each
and
other,
everyone.
And then by the end, they've realised that fighting each other isn't going to get the problem solved. And they join forces back again.
It's a nice message.
Defeat the evil go-karting maniac.
Should we take a quick listen, Bill?
Oh, yeah.
Will, a professional verdict on that? Only a snippet?
Brilliant.
Okay. Excellent.
Perfect. I've written down Dragon Force meets K-pop. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
I just want to be the crab, if I'm allowed.
Okay.
If that's all right with you guys.
You can be Kerry Wang's little crabs.
Okay. That's all I wanted to be, one of his little crabs.
Aww. Maybe I'll be Roy Wang's Tanguan.
Give him a good scratch.
And you can be an origami crane.
The most mystical one.
Yeah.
Everyone behave themselves.
Blade
as long as I can be the main dancer here in Studio One, I'm more than happy. That brings us to the end of today's programme. Thanks to Bill Luthi. Thanks to my special guests, Alice Vincent and Will Hodgkinson. The programme was produced by Holly Fisher, research by Fernando, and I'm Tom Edwards. To play us out, yes, let's have more of that number one from China. This is In the Name of My Faith by The Fighting Boys. Thanks for listening. 我生命拒绝在黑暗之中被湮灭，像荒芜都溶解，赤手中剑深渊的界限，用生命为极限者，绝不妥协的信念。新的梦终会显着世界。